Labor Committee is called to order. First off, I want to say hello to all of you and welcome you back. This is our first meeting coming back together for this new session this year. And I just want to take a quick moment to go around and introduce ourselves. I know we all know each other and probably everybody here, but just to sort of create our good working environment together, I want to go through and give our introductions. And then I'm going to have us introduce also our new pages. So if our pages would be willing to join us here at the table, and we'll go ahead and just please stay at the table while, and we'll start with Senator Pappas down at the end, but we'll do some quick introductions.
Hello, everyone. In case you haven't met me before, I'm Senator Sandy Pappas from St. Paul. You are in my district. Welcome.
Senator Glenn Grunhagen, District 17, which is southwest of the metro area. Thankful to be back and look forward to working on issues that are important to the people of the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, hello, it's great to be back. Gene Dornick, State Senator for District 23, which is south of here, southeast Minnesota. Just say Austin and Albert Lea are the biggest communities. So looking forward to working together again. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Eric Olson, fiscal analyst, nonpartisan fiscal analyst for the Labor Committee.
Hello, good afternoon. I'm Carlin Doyle Fontaine. I am Senate counsel for the Labor and the Jobs Committee, and look forward to helping you with any drafting or any other requests that you have with regard to this committee.
State Senator Jen McEwen, I represent Senate District 8, which is almost all of the city of Duluth in the Minnesota State Senate, and I'm the chair.
Good afternoon. My name is Jack Fisher. I am the committee legislative assistant for Senator McEwen and the Labor Committee.
And I'm Fabian Bean, the committee administrator for the Labor Committee.
John Marty, District 40, which is five suburbs north of here.
Senator Rob Kupek, I am on the western edge of Minnesota, Senate District 4, which is Moorhead and over to Detroit Lakes.
I'm Senator Bill Liske. I represent Senate District 58. I always like to joke that I am where the city and the rural meet. I represent parts of almost all of the city of Farmington, the city of Northfield, parts of the city of New Prague. I live in the city of Lonsdale, which the district kind of looks like a rubber duck, so I always tell people it's the rubber ducky district of Minnesota.
My name is Kylan Johnson. I'm from Shoreview, Minnesota. I went to St. John's for undergrad. Happy to be here.
My name is William Olson. I'm from Southwest Minneapolis. I just recently graduated from Emory University, and I'm happy to be here as a committee page. Thank you.
And thank you very much for introducing yourselves. Welcome. And Senator Hochschild.
Yeah, I'm Senator Hochschild. I'm the vice chair of the Labor Committee. I represent the largest and most rural district up in the Arrowhead of Minnesota.
Very good. And, yes, thank you. Could our partisan research staff please join us at the table for an introduction? Thank you, Senator.
My name is Danny Gillis. I'm the DFL researcher for the committee.
My name is Dave Frazier. I'm the Republican researcher for the committee.
Thank you very much. Thanks, everyone. And we appreciate all of the work that goes into making our committee hearings happen and the bills that we're hearing move through and get some good discussion and votes. And so thank you, everybody, for all of the work that you do to make this committee happen. First on our agenda is the confirmation of Minnesota Bureau of Mediation Services Commissioner Johnny Villarreal. Commissioner Villarreal, if you would join us at the testifier table. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee, Commissioner, and we look forward to hearing from you today and talking with you about your work and hearing from you. So I'm going to just toss it right over to you. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I want to thank the committee for the opportunity to be here today to introduce myself and to share a little bit about my experience
More importantly, to share about my passion for the work of the Bureau. I've dedicated most of my adult life to public service and was first introduced to the work of the BMS when I was working my way through college as a part-time school bus driver in the Robbinsdale School District. I participated in mediation several times as a negotiation team member and watched the mediators help us find common ground and reach agreement. I knew that's what I wanted to do with my life. I discovered there was a requirement to be a chief advocate at the bargaining table in order to even apply to be a mediator. So I jumped at the opportunity to work for SEIU 284 when I was offered a position as a contract organizer, and then I went to work for MAPE as a business agent, and also spent some time getting Rule 114 qualified as a mediator in the state of Minnesota and doing mediations with Ramsey County Conciliation and Housing Court. In 2007, my opportunity finally came and I met the minimum qualifications to apply as a mediator, and it's been everything I could have hoped for. In 2010, I joined the Minnesota Army National Guard as another way to publicly serve. I got out of basic training at 39 and commissioned as an officer at the age of 40. Deployed to Afghanistan as a company commander, working casualty operations in 2018. And returned from Iraq last year, where I served as the Boss Eye Director at Al Asad Air Base in Al Anbar Province. Our agency does our best to help people get through uncertain times, and I will continue to do everything I can to use my more than two decades of experience in labor relations and my 14 years of experience in the National Guard to lead a staff that's highly skilled and highly motivated to help people in need. I want to thank you for your time and consideration, and I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you very much for that introduction. We appreciate it very much. I know that you've had a number of meetings also with members of the committee, with myself also, and it's wonderful to have you back after your deployment. We had missed you here, and we're glad to have you back. Members, I'm going to go ahead. I have some questions for the commissioner that I'd like to go ahead and ask, but I think I'd like to just go ahead and open it up, first of all, to any questions or discussion that members would like to have at this point. So are there any questions for the commissioner or comments? Yes, Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And really, you answered my question, which was to ask the commissioner, are you still on military leave? When you got back, and who took your place while you were gone, and do you anticipate having to take leaves again?
Thank you, Madam.
And thank you for your service, too.
Madam Chair, Senator.
Commissioner.
I returned from Iraq in January of 23 and came back to work in March of 23. Did not go through the confirmation process in time to have that happen. So in the Army National Guard, you never know when your name will be called, but we have something called dwell, which means that for a period of about 4 years, I won't be able to be called to deploy. Now, I served through the civil unrest due to George Floyd. I served through some COVID times, so we never know, but I've got a strong Deputy Commissioner, Don Cavage, who took over while I was gone as Acting Commissioner, and we have a Labor Mediation Manager that also is able to help with representation.
Thank you. Members, any further questions or discussions? All right, I have some questions, and then afterward, if anything comes up for anyone, we can bring that up then as well. So Commissioner, last year we passed new protections for public sector workers' rights to organize. How is the Bureau implementing these changes, and how will you implement future legislative changes? And related to that, with these new protections, how will you engage stakeholders when the Bureau is considering any changes to policies or procedures?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So many of the changes that came out of last session are handled first at the local level. So things like new employee orientation or time off for union business, those things are handled through the unions and their employers. The Bureau's role really begins with a petition. And so that petition can come from an employee organization, whether it's to organize a new bargaining unit or do a unit clarification, a transfer of representation, or a challenge, for instance. An employer can file a petition for unit clarification as well. Maybe this position is supervisory or confidential, should be excluded or included. And a group of employees can file a petition to decertify a union. So that's where our role really comes in on those pieces. And our work in outreach is with both unions and employers through Association of Minnesota Counties or League of Minnesota Cities, Minnesota School Board Associations, or through the various AFL-CIO unions or associations that we work with. We are definitely having conversations with them. And with regards to new legislation that could come up, our role really is as a technical advisor. So the conversations I've had with our stakeholders and legislators is that we're not going to tell you to go left or whether to go right. But we're going to say if you want to go left, the steering wheel should probably look like this in order for us to administer it the way you want and intend.
Thank you, Commissioner. My next question is, how are you ensuring that mediators are prepared to work with diverse and varied populations that seek services from the Bureau and from your office?
Madam Chair, so the concepts of alternative dispute resolution, which is really what we do, are all focused in respectful behavior, no matter who we're working with. And all of our staff goes through an annual diversity, equity, and inclusion training piece that's mandatory through the state, but also each one of our staff members has an individual development plan. And through that, there are trainings that are identified, especially for our professional staff that go to things that are CLE eligible, those types of things where you've got ethics and diversity topics embedded in those trainings.
Thank you. And my next question goes to staffing issues. So how are you going to ensure that your office has sufficient staffing to keep up with the increased usage of mediation?
Madam Chair, it's a unique time for us. We used to have more than 30 FTE with the Bureau in the 90s. We currently have 10, and we have several vacancies that we're looking to fill. And there are interviews happening right now as we speak for a new mediator. We have currently 5 full-time mediators that cover all cities, counties, public utilities, townships, school districts, state of Minnesota contracts. So we are lucky to have a labor mediation manager that came from being a mediator, a deputy that came from being a mediator, and myself who came from since 2007 that can handle cases as well. So 75% of our staff has got 5 years or less, but they're very dedicated and experienced because they had to have that experience prior to coming to us. So our recruitment and retention is no different than any other public sector entity out there that's trying our best to recruit. And because we have a specific role to play, we have a unique candidate pool, but we are doing our best. For instance, the 7-year requirement I reduced to 5 years for this recent posting, with allowing 2 years for a JD or a master's in order to expand that pool of candidates.
Thank you very much. My next question goes to some of the conflict that can occur. Obviously, this is your wheelhouse, is conflict. You're dealing with it and helping people move through conflicts. How do you address when there might be one party or another with accusations that there's unfair bias or overreach by the neutral involved in mediation or arbitration? How do you usually handle that sort of accusation that there might be bias?
Sure. It
starts with the makeup of the Bureau in that we fall under the managerial and commissioner's plan, which means we aren't allowed to be union members. We come in as a neutral agency with that role, and we take that nonpartisan role very seriously. Many times we will say, you know, we're carrying a message from the other side, and that message isn't what, you know, a party wants to hear. And we do end up in the kill the messenger situation sometimes. But overall, the Supreme Court of Minnesota Chief Justice Hudson had a comment that really resonated with me. And she was asked about the makeup of the court and how they were appointed by Democratic governors. And her quote was, "We are not partisan. Who we are as judges and how we make our decisions are a function of the rule of law, the case law that's out there, the precedent, and how we apply that to the facts. So that's how we approach our work, and I think people should find comfort in that. That's what our role is, and that's how we view our roles as neutrals, as mediators, and really helping parties reach that common ground to reach an agreement."
Thank you, Commissioner. I think I appreciate that quote from Judge Hudson, and I think that we find ourselves increasingly in a unique position. Sometimes our institutions here in Minnesota still have these cultures of nonpartisanship and real dedication to applying the rule of law, our policy or rules, whatever their wheelhouse is, in a way that is as neutral and as focused on rule keeping and policy keeping as possible. I appreciate that very much, and hope that we are able to foster that and hold strong to that, because it's so important. This is my last question for you, Commissioner. The Bureau has been essential in protecting the rights of public sector workers to organize and collectively bargain. In your opinion, what is the role of the Bureau when workers want to organize their workplace?
Madam Chair, our role is to administer the Public Employment Labor Relations Act, whatever that says. And that says that employees have the right to organize. As I stated previously, a group of employees can choose to decertify a union as well. We will administer that just as much as the previous, right? So our role is to strictly take what the law says, apply our rules to the law, evenly and consistently as possible.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, is there any further discussion or any further questions before we, yes, Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for coming. So just a couple questions. You had mentioned that your staffing is way down in the 90s. I think you said it was about 30, and now you have 10. What is your average, I know each one is unique, I'm sure, but of the case, that the time that would it take, how much, or is it just one person assigned each case? And then the tag along would be that, is how many cases in a year, an average year do you have?
Madam Chair, Senator.
Commissioner.
Our caseload does vary, and because we're in a situation where teachers are bound by a two-year contract on the odd-numbered years, we tend to have a flux of cases in that time frame. So we are in the middle of teacher season, our cases are up. But for mediation cases, just contract, in the 250 range for contracts, we also do grievances, we do representation hearings, we do Labor Management Committee facilitation and trainings, so those can flux as well. Each one of our mediators is cross-trained to be able to do both contract and grievance mediations, do facilitation and those types of things. So yes, the numbers can change. Because we have that flexibility of cross-training, we're able to keep up now, especially with, as I said, the ability of the administration in the agency to be able to take cases as well.
Senator Dornick.
Madam Chair, so thank you for your answers. Thank you for your work. Appreciate what you do. Mediation is probably a tough tough job. So thank you. And also thank you for your military service and for coming in today. Appreciate all that you do.
All right. Thank you, Senator Dornick. Anyone else? All right. Do we have a motion? Yes, Senator Housechild.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to recommend to the Senate the appointment of Johnny Villarreal as Commissioner of the Bureau of Mediation Services to be confirmed.
Thank you, Senator. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion to recommend to the Senate that the appointment of Johnny Villarreal as Commissioner of the Bureau of Mediation Services be confirmed does pass. Thank you very much, Commissioner. Thank you, members. Next on our docket today is Senate File 3544, which is a bill that Senator Pappas is bringing to us today.
My right hand.
Welcome, Senator Pappas, to your bill.
Madam Chair and members, I'm thrilled to be the first bill on the docket in the Labor Committee this year. We're busy already with our session. Just briefly, and then I'd like to introduce the infamous and iconic Rich Neumeister, who's joining me at the table. I think it's his first time in the Labor Committee, so he needs a little bit more introduction than that. Senate File 3544 would require all employers to provide employees access to their personnel records upon request, to the extent that they're maintained by their employer. Current law only requires employers with 20 or more employees access to those records. If you do not maintain records, if you are a family business that only has a couple employees, you are not required provide that access because you don't have any personal records. Minnesota law currently also provides employees of employers with 20 or more employees to dispute information within their personnel record. If there's something in there they don't think is accurate or true, and so they would have to either, the employer would have to either rectify that or include a statement identifying the disputed information if the employer does not at least agree to remove it. That's as simple as it is, and Mr. Neumeister really brought this to me. He has been a true citizen lobbyist here since 1978, he reminds me, lobbying here on data privacy and open government issues. He worked on the law originally on the personal record, and at that point they had to do the 20 employee threshold. But now we're really trying to rectify that. So for a little more background, Mr. Neumeister.
Welcome, Mr. Neumeier. We look forward to hearing your testimony in support of this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rich Neumeister. And as Senator Pappas indicated, I have been around a long time. The last time I was in your committee was, or the iteration of it, was 2007, when it was interesting, Dave Knutson, who was a senator from Burnsville, we worked on the 181967 provision, and that was where that information can be shared. And that was the last time I was in before your committee. The fair information principles, as you look at my testimony, is what is being enunciated in this law. Fair information. This is a concept developed in the late 60s, early 70s. That you have a right to look at your information. You have a right, if there is something that is not correct, you can amend it or dispute it or remove it or whatever. Now, again, referring to what is, I've been here a long time, well, I've tried to get those principles in law. As Senator Marty remembered in 1989 and 1990, we worked on the Fair Information Insurance Law. Senator, Representative Pappas, now a senator, remembers working with the well-known Florian Chmielewski on the drug testing law. Where we
I don't think they know him.
Oh, okay. He was a senator from northern Minnesota. Conservative, you know, worked together on. So medical privacy, those fair information principles. In 1989, it was a new concept for private employers across the country. There were only a handful of states. We did that. It was a lot of back and forth, and so which laid out the compromise. What is a personnel record? There's a different iteration of it than introduced. So now what we're trying to do 35 years later, because more information is now computerized, more states are doing it also. So, you know, it's one of those things you take a look back and sort of say, well, who in Minnesota does not have the same rights that many other people do, but those same issues are there? And many, many employees, as the definition points out, do not, in the private sector, do not have that right. So this is what the bill does. It brings those rights to them. A number of states, about 18, 19 states, many of the states include all employers. All employers. There's some that might say 3, 5, 6, but I think it's only 2 of them, I believe, but it's all employers. Wisconsin is all employers. Iowa is all employers. And it's interesting to note, if when you do a survey or a panoply of some of these, some of them have adopted some of the things that we did back in 89. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, those are my comments. I just want to correct one thing because it's part of a permanent record, is my general written testimony. On the third paragraph and fourth paragraph, the last sentence is the same. That on the third paragraph, that should be deleted. The definition of what a personal record in the statute bears that out. It was just, I'm still new to all put together for a PDF kind of deal. So that sentence should not apply to the third paragraph, but it does apply appropriately for the fourth paragraph. Thank you very much for the moments of your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony and for your work on this and other legislation that's so important. That's a lot of work, and it doesn't go unnoticed and unappreciated. We appreciate it very much. Members, is there any discussion or questions for Senator Pappas or a testifier in regard to the bill? Yes. Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For a person who definitely enjoys the idea of privacy and rights and things like that, I guess my only question, based on listening now to the whole bill and kind of how it was described, I'm asking, so what you had said is that if there isn't information stored, then there's no like mandatory, like you now need to hold more information. This is just access to the current information the employer has. Is that correct?
Senator Pappas?
Madam Chair, Senator Liske, that's correct.
Senator Liske?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess that was my only concern, is that, you know, if it doesn't require the business to do anything new, then I guess I don't see any reason to have any opposition to it myself. So I'm glad to hear it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Liske. Any other questions or discussions on the bill? Okay, very good. I think that there's a lot of support for this bill, and we would enthusiastically, I believe, vote to pass it on if that were the need, but we don't need to do that. We're going to hold this bill over, is my understanding, for possible inclusion. And so with that, unless Senator Pappas, is that your understanding as well?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Senator. With that, Senate File 3544 is held over, laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
We'll now move to Senate File 3495, Senator McEwen's Employees' Rights Poster Creation Requirements. Senator McEwen, to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 3495 is related to a provision that we passed last year to ban captive audience meetings, as this committee may well recall. After that went into effect last year, we have heard from the Department of Labor and Industry that employers have asked for a template of the poster required under the law. So this bill, Senate File 3495, simply requires the department to create the poster to make it easier for employers to comply, and so that both employers and employees are aware of their rights and responsibilities under the law. So this was just a necessary piece that DLI has asked us to do. And we have looked at it. We don't have any additional cost. So this is something I think that we're going to be able to do fairly easily. So respectfully, I ask for your support.
Thank you. Any discussion? All right. With that, Senate File 3495 will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And with that, the Labor Committee is adjourned.